When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
It's 107. This is WGN Radio. I hope you knew that. This is John Williams. You can hear me weekdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We are downtown Chicago, broadcasting today from 303 East Wacker. It's a big, tall building right next to the river and the lake where the skies are blue and the water is three different shades of green and blue. It's a pretty day downtown. There are not many of us here. The governor will be speaking at 2:30 this afternoon, and it is our plan once again to broadcast the entirety of the governor's press conference. Presumably Dr. Nzike or Allison Arwadi will be him with him, and you'll hear that live here on WGN Radio around 2:30 this afternoon. Mary Schmeek in the Chicago Tribune has a new column up, and it is headlined, "When It's All Over, A Pandemic Fantasy." This is Mary Schmeek imagining what our near future will be like. And she wrote, "When it was all over, when the virus had retreated and the fear had faded, the people came out of their homes and they were changed. Changed by solitude, by gratitude, by grief. They came out of little houses and big ones, out of apartments and rented rooms to count their blessings and their losses. The virus hadn't hurt everyone equally, but it had hurt everyone somehow. When it was over, they no longer greeted each other by shaking hands. Though their hands were cleaner than ever, they hugged fewer people now, but most could not resist hugging the ones they loved. They wept to feel the pulse and warmth of the bodies they had missed so deeply. Others continued to keep their distance and simply placed their hands over their hearts and bowed. Some gathered for overdue mourning in honor of those who had died. So many had died. When it was over, the living understood more about death. When they came out of their homes, they felt smaller, but in some ways stronger. Isolation had made them feel like pioneers, like immigrants, all of them displaced in time, removed from the familiar, aware that they would never return to the way they had lived before. Some had learned to bake, to sew, to clean properly. Many learned to live on less, though those already living on less, less was even harder to bear. In their renewed freedom, the people once again sat together at restaurants and bars and coffee houses, though not as often as they once did, or as close, and rarely without a trace of fear. They laughed and told stories and gossiped, though every now and then someone would say, 'It's weird to be doing this again, isn't it?' And with a twitch, they would register that among the things they'd lost was the presumption of safety. During their enforced isolation, some had dreamed that they would go out dancing again, and they did. By the time it was over, the concept of the weekend was dead. Some people still went to the office, but there were fewer offices. The older people still looked for a newspaper on their doorsteps, but print newspapers, along with some online news outlets, had been among the casualties of the plague. And their neighborhoods had changed. At first, they looked around and thought, what used to be there? And then they remembered, oh, yeah, that was the old family restaurant or that cute shop that sold things that no one really needed but made life more fun. New businesses, mostly online, had been born while they were in exile, but they missed the old ones until eventually they forgot. Against the odds, a few bookstores hung on. By the time it was over, some people were heftier because they'd been living on whatever weird food they could find on the scavenged grocery store shelves. Some were thinner for the same reasons. The ones who could afford bidet toilets bought them because they never again wanted to worry about the toilet paper supply chain. Men who had been clean-shaven when the collective self-isolation began now wore shaggy beards. If Pete Buttigieg can do it, some said, why not me? Women whose hair had been a vivid color at the outset of the madness had gone gray. What the hell, some said. It's easier this way. Humor, they had learned, is an essential supply, even during a pandemic, which is why Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot was leading in the presidential polls. Yes, the people were sad, but in some ways happier, or at least a little wiser than before. Why had it taken so much pain for them to clearly see what and who they loved, to appreciate a slower life, to reconnect with old friends, to marvel at the beautiful places they'd once been able to travel to without fear, to listen to the birds? Why had so many people had to suffer before more people understood the value of a government that works, the deadly danger of one that doesn't, the profound inequities in health care and education and, well, everything? They saw it all more clearly now, which was not to say they knew how to fix it. They spoke with a new vocabulary: exponential, epidemiology, telemedicine, Zoom. More of them, not everyone, it's never everyone, now believed in science. Other things they had learned: essential does not mean well paid. Schooling your children is harder than it looks. Crisis reveals the best in humans and the worst. Nature does not care what human beings want. The sun still rises. We'll never take so much for granted again, they said, and a few of them kept that promise. And then time passed. Eventually, those who remembered the great pandemic of 2020 were gone, and in some bar somewhere, a young person would say, "My great-grandfather died of some weird virus, Corvid or something. I don't know exactly when, but can you imagine? Thank God that would never happen now." And that young person would laugh, not knowing that one day in their lifetime, a calamity previously unimagined would arrive and say, "Surprise!" But that day is in the future. So is the day this calamity will be in our past. Until then, we wait and hope and distract ourselves by wondering, what will it be like when this is over? Mary Schmeek's column posted in the Chicago Tribune online today. And I suspect if it's not in print today, I had a print edition then in my kitchen. I didn't see it there, Mary. I suspect that's her Sunday column in print. And you can read it online as well. A lot of people are starting to do that now. A month into this, we've had various versions of how we're relating to it and reacting to it, how it's impacting us, where our thoughts are. And a lot of people are starting to talk seriously about how we are changed or will be changed as a result of this. There's another piece that one of our co-producers or podcasters here, Tracy Weiner, sent me, and it's somebody imagining how we're all going to behave and what it's going to be like in the future. And that piece came more with like a warning to us to not let this opportunity go unchecked. That is, we have done a sort of cultural reset in America in the last month. And if ever there was an opportunity for us to be different and better, it is this. I mean, we have stopped doing everything the way we did it. We've sort of taken stock of who, what, and where we are. And maybe this is that golden opportunity. It's a pandemic, but it's also an opportunity to imagine what America could be like, what the world could be like going forward. And it comes with this backdrop that when we do start to come out, advertising and government are both going to try and tell you that this did not happen. The article is sort of about gaslighting, but the point of it was, don't let the government and don't let the commercials and all of the feel-good ads you're going to see saying we got through it together, now let's go back to the way it was. Don't let that persuade you that maybe we have an opportunity here to be a better version of ourselves. Goes another line of thought today. It's 1:15. By the way, Bob Kessler's in the WGN Radio newsroom. I've got a friend of mine, a guest coming on in just a second here, Nick Nagley, the co-founder of Whiskey Acres. They stopped making whiskey and bourbon. They're making hand sanitizers for people. Good for them. But just speaking of keeping us safe, Bob Kessler, do you know, is Mayor Lori Lightfoot out in car one right now patrolling the city looking for people breaking the rules?
I don't know if she is. I know she was at the news conference earlier today. But as far as that, no, I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Isn't that an amazing story, though? I mean, literally, Lori Lightfoot driving around Chicago when the weather was nice Tuesday, and when she saw people that were gathering too closely or in too many numbers, she got out of her car and said, "Hey, you kids, break it up." It's like, oh, no, Auntie Lori is here, and we're in trouble.
Yes. Well, she can't get everybody, but maybe we're talking about it, so that helps.
Well, that's it. So I'll tell you what, you don't want to get busted, but you really don't want to get busted by Lori Lightfoot with that stern expression of hers, arms crossed in front of her, looking at you. By the way, the other sort of story about Lori Lightfoot this week is the business about her haircut. And literally, NBC News has the following story. Chicago mayor defends hairstylist visit. I won't read it all, but in part, Lightfoot was criticized for her actions getting a haircut after previously stating in one of her public service announcements that getting your roots done is not essential. It was one of those funny PSAs she had out there. And she was on the phone telling somebody, talking him down, saying you don't have to get your hair done. The stylist in the picture was wearing a mask and gloves, the mayor said in defense of her haircut during a press conference this week. I'm the public face of this city, she said. I'm on national media. I'm out in the public eye. Her critics have said, you don't need to look any better than you do with your long hair. JB's not getting his haircut. You don't have to get your haircut to go on national media. And maybe you don't even have to go on national media, said a couple of her critics. If I'm scoring Lori Lightfoot for any given week since the crisis began, I give her good marks every single week, though. This was her swing and a miss, as Eric Zorn called it. It was bad optics. It might have been bad behavior. But I'm not going to be too critical, considering the fact that I think our mayor and our governor are doing a pretty good job. But Griffin, just real quick, we were imagining what it would be like, though, if Lori Lightfoot, COVID crime fighter, were a sort of primetime action cop TV series, and if it was, it would sound like this. Time for another exciting edition of Lori Lightfoot, COVID crime fighter. This week, your jump shot is always going to be weak. Hey, you kids, stay out of the parks.
Hey, Chip, let's play some basketball.
Nah, man. I don't think we should because of the virus.
No way, man. We are young and appear to be asymptomatic.
Okay. You've convinced me to play sports here in this park.
See? Isn't this fun? We are having fun and feel invincible.
Hey! Hey, you kids!
Oh no!
No!
It's
Mayor Lori Lightfoot!
Even though you don't show signs of the virus, you still could have the virus. 25% may be asymptomatic carriers.
Okay, Lori Lightfoot, we will stop playing hoops here in this public space.
Yes, we have learned a valuable lesson.
Driving around in car one, Lori Lightfoot is the COVID crime fighter from earlier this week. That'd be season one, episode one, for those of you keeping score at home. There's a guy that we've had on a few times when his business kind of grew up in the DeKalb area, and he entered his bourbon and whiskey in a statewide competition and won first place. And our friend Lou Manfredini and I kind of like the occasional Manhattan, so we got to know Nick Nagley, who's the co-founder of Whiskey Acres. And that's Nick on the phone right now. Hey, Nick, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, John. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. You, Koval, some of the other distillers in the state and in the Chicago area have gone from making spirits to making hand sanitizers. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we kind of jokingly about a month ago said, hey, let's do a little bit of hand sanitizer. And we went, 50 gallons is too much. And we're doing about 1,000 gallons a day now.
You're making 1,000 gallons a day. But the alcohol content for, say, even the strong spirits is not the same as the alcohol content you need for sanitizing, right?
Yeah. So if you're going to kill something with alcohol, it needs to be at least 60%. And just about everything that's in a bottle is somewhere between 40 and 50%.
Right.
So a lot of folks joke about it, but if you've got alcohol at home, drink it in moderation. Leave it to the experts.
But remember, when this thing first hit, people were talking about making your own hand sanitizer with cheap vodka. That doesn't work. That's not strong enough, right?
That's right. Vodka is about 40% alcohol. So do something else with cheap vodka, too. Don't drink that. Don't use it for sanitizer. I don't even know what you should do with cheap vodka. Stay away from it.
You should not have that in your home or world.
Yeah, that's right.
So then you guys have then gone, are you still making bourbon and whiskey there in DeKalb at Whiskey Acres?
We are. Yeah, so we've got we got two shifts, and so we've dedicated one shift to bourbon production, and that's the easy job to have these days. And the other job is hand sanitizer production. We're doing both because, you know, we're trying to have an impact on the community and you know, give folks things they need today. At the same time, we want to stay in business and be in business down the road. And if we don't make whiskey today, we don't have anything to sell or drink in 5 years.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's interesting.
We're trying to deal with today and tomorrow as strategically as possible.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in those terms. I thought you just make a batch and sell it. It's got to sit for a while. And if it's not sitting for a while, you'll hit another wall in 5 years. So you're making this these what jugs? These tell me a little bit about the sanitizer production then.
Well, it's similar in the sense you put liquid in a bottle regarding making sanitizer, but instead of these beautiful glass bottles, we have semi-loads of milk jugs showing up. And we're putting in gallon jugs and palletizing them. And we're donating and have donated quite a bit to our local health department and some hospitals and nursing homes and things like that. And we'll continue to donate what we can. But we're also scaling to a point where we're working with, you know, large national distributors so that they can get it from us in pallet or multi-pallet quantities to distribute to those who need it. You know, we're focusing on getting stuff packaged, labeled, and useful, and don't want to be in the retail side of the business.
Well, how does that happen? Because this wasn't your market. How do you know the specs to make it by, who to sell it? How do they know to buy it from you? How do you determine a price? How do you exchange the money for the product and then ship it? I mean, all of the 4 weeks ago, this didn't exist. And now how many units are you moving and how do you scale up like that?
You don't sleep for a couple nights trying to figure out what in the world to do next. But then, you know, you've asked a lot of good questions that we've sort of figured out. So you really have to reconfigure the supply chain and get all those things to show up. And in terms of a recipe, the FDA and the WHO came out with a standardized recipe as well as sort of a leniency in the way they interpret the way we can do things. And up through, I think it's the last day of June, they've given us essentially a license to produce hand sanitizer. So we have absolutely no creative latitude whatsoever in making it. We have some very, very strict rules of what goes in. And a lot of people ask, how do you make hand sanitizer? Well, the first thing is you have to have eye-proof alcohol. So we're dealing with stuff that's 80%, so 160-proof alcohol, and glycerin. And glycerin, literally just to make it a little bit sticky so that when you spray it on your hands or whatever you're trying to sanitize, it stays where it belongs. Some hydrogen peroxide, and that kills anything that the alcohol doesn't. And this wonderful component that's called Bitrex, and it is literally the most bitter compound known to man. And you, to simplify it, you sprinkle a little bit of that Bitrex into the big batch, and that makes it bitter so that if little kids come across it, they won't drink it.
It's not palatable. So then how are people finding it to purchase?
From a retail standpoint, we've partnered with a couple strategic partners. So if you are west of the city or can head west of the city, you can buy it at retail from our friends at the Hy-Vee store in Sycamore.
Really?
And they're getting a pallet or two every week. And we actually just started getting it to our friends at the Royal Wren in Geneva. And you can get from most folks. And if you've got a, like I said, an industrial need or a commercial need, you can email us at info@whiskeyacres.com. And we can work with you to do it in quantity. We really don't like to see anything leaving here in less than pallet quantities, which is 240 gallons.
Got it.
And to be honest with you, John, we're booked through the first week of May. We don't have the ability to put any more in a bottle than what we've got scheduled. So if folks are interested and have a need, reach out now because our production calendar is filling up quickly.
Well, I'm sorry, and I'm glad to hear that.
Right. You know, what we're really scratching our head on is how long is this going to last?
Right.
And you know, so let's just pretend social distancing ends at the end of the month and people have to leave their house or get to leave their house. In my humble opinion, I think hand sanitizer consumption is going to go up 100-fold.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so And I had a nursing home reach out to me and said they needed hand sanitizer because their Purell supplier told them they weren't going to be able to get it until November. November. So, so you asked a good question. Is how long does this go on? I hope not that long, but we'll do our best to keep up with supply or demand with supply as long as we can.
Okay. info@whiskeyacres.com if I wanted to reach out to you and say, hey, how can I get a pallet of that stuff, right?
That's right.
info@whiskeyacres.com. You can email Nick Nagley and the people over there. Well, that's just fascinating. And, you know, you
hey,
make
John,
it. Yes, sir.
Our team actually right now is bottling it. So let's give a shout out here. We've got, I think, Eric and Trish and Jen and Lisa and Julia are literally putting this stuff in bottles as we speak right now.
Are they nearby? So, if we did a shout out to them, could they all give us a cheer back, or are they too far away?
We are in different zip codes right now.
Ah, okay. Well, to listening. All of them listening, good job. Thank you. Woohoo.
Yeah, this team here is mostly our front of house staff that would welcome you with a warm smile and ask what drink you'd like if you were coming to visit us on a normal Saturday. Right now they have masks on and gloves on, and they're huddled in a corner putting sanitizer in jugs and telling anybody who comes visit to get the heck away from them.
Yeah.
It's a much different mentality than what we usually have out here.
I'm going to let you go, Nick, but I just remind folks, though, that your whiskey is really good. Your bourbon is really good. You also came out with a maple syrup from the old bourbon cask, so the maple syrup doesn't have any alcohol, but the maple syrup sort of has a bourbony feel to it, which is just awesome. So I hope you continue to make those products, too.
We are. We will. And John, I will get you some of those for this week when you're going to do your giveaways. I'm happy to get that stuff to you.
Oh, you don't have to send some of that to 303 East Wacker, Chicago, Illinois, 60601, John Williams.
Never to his attention. I hear loose snags it as they come in. So
yeah, I know.
Make
there's
sure it gets
there's
to
a
you.
Scramble at the door. Okay, yeah, if we do another Zoom party auction, we'll throw that in to sort of entice people to bid. But thank you. Congratulations. Continued success, Nick.
My pleasure, John. Thank you. Be well.
Nick Nagley is in DeKalb, and that's Whiskey Acres. info@whiskeyacres.com if you need hand sanitizer. We discovered so many stories this week about people, as they say, pivoting to try and continue to keep their business going or maybe find a new kind of business to do. It's 1:31. As we continue to get through our days, the new normal is starting to feel, I won't say normal, but it does find certain rhythms. And one of the things I'm seeing that's happening more and more often now, and it's not a good thing, is when people are done with their gloves and their face masks, they're dropping them on the ground and the street and the sidewalk and the lawns and the parks. And I don't know what you people are thinking. I've never understood litter bugs, but now you're dropping little time bombs. Please don't be doing that. People are shopping with face masks more than ever. I was at the Jewel yesterday because I had to have some supplies that included vanilla ice cream, but there were things I needed to have. So I go there and I was just amazed. I knew people wearing face masks, but it's like the light went on. And I would say 70% of the people in my grocery store had those face masks on, and I'm seeing more and more of them littered about these days. And it's not just litter when you do that now. It's kind of terrifying to people to see that. Did you know that they're doing another episode of Tiger King on Netflix? Tomorrow night, I believe, is when it's going to be broadcast. I'm reading from People magazine. You know, Tiger King is the story of that crazy guy, Joe Exotic, and a bunch of other crazy people. And then the lady that you'd hoped would deliver us from people that are capturing and breeding and treating badly big cats. And that woman is just as crazy as the rest of them. There's no good people in that series. So from People magazine, one of the many surprising moments in Netflix hit docuseries Tiger King, Murder, Mayhem, and Madness came when Joseph Maldonado Passage, a.k.a. Joe Exotic, married Dylan Passage just 2 months after husband Travis Maldonado accidentally shot himself and died. Perhaps even more surprising is Passage's determination to stay with his husband since Maldonado Passage's arrest September 18th, 9 months after their wedding, and through his 22-year prison sentence for hiring a hitman to kill his rival, Carol Baskin. She's the lady that runs the Big Cat Rescue.
I'm not going anywhere, Passage 24 tells people. His husband is twice his age. Joe was there for me in my darkest moments. I'm not going to just abandon him when he needs support more than anything. Producer Griffin just got off the phone with Dylan Passage. He might join us later this week. Griff, I had to make a quick call there because we weren't sure if we were going to be able to connect with him. I have another guest lined up now, so I had to make the choice. Go with Sarah, go with Dylan. Go with Sarah, go with Dylan.
And I was weirdly kind of starstruck talking to him on the phone, although I haven't watched Tiger King, so I don't know who he is. So I don't care, but I suspect that a lot of people I know who are obsessed with the show would be interested and excited to talk to him.
I know. Well, that's I got to get my mind right around that interview before I do it. I wasn't emotionally prepared for it because I don't know if I want to beat this young man up and give him some grief.
Well, you have time. He's available next week, he said. He seemed eager to do the interview. So you'll get another shot.
I still just want to live with this thought for a minute. Should I beat him up a little bit and say, hey, what the hell are you people doing to these cats? And what's your deal anyway? Or just take it for the wild ride that it is? And I think the existential question for all of us is, would that show be that show if it weren't for the pandemic? I mean, this isn't happening without the virus, right?
No, I think it would still be a hit.
You do?
I think that's what Netflix will become, is a purveyor of like reality TV, or it'll still be many things, but that they've really zeroed in on that as what has become most successful for them in the past few months.
What's that?
Reality like a slightly higher grade, higher concept reality TV. Love is Blind, The Circle,
yeah,
and
you're calling
Tiger King have been their three biggest hits of the year, all in quick succession.
Yeah, but what do you mean by higher grade?
There's a different sort of feel to those shows than what you see on network TV.
I suppose so. I just wonder, you know, Dave Ennett and I really had an odd moment when he finally got me to watch it, and I watched it, and then he said, what did you think? And I couldn't put into words how I felt. And Dave was kind of stymied too. We sort of appreciated that it was well done, but also, like all documentary series, there's questions you wish they had answered that they don't. But you also sort of didn't like the feeling that you met a whole bunch of people and you didn't like any of them, and you said, well, what the hell was that for?
Yeah.
That's where we were.
Yeah, I believe you. I can't speak to it. I haven't watched it.
So my friend Sarah Tiemann's on the other phone line. Oh, okay, Sarah, you win. You'd better be good, girl, because I could have done the Tiger King guy.
I'm here, John, and not sorry. I haven't gotten into the Tiger King, and I'm purposefully not watching. So,
if you decide not to get on that bus,
yep,
Wherever you otherwise go, that will be just as good a journey. You do not have to get on the Tiger King bus.
And I'm not getting on that bus. We've made a conscious decision in our household for a few reasons why we're not getting on that bus.
Two reasons?
Well, you know, I at one point in my time, I had thought about being a veterinarian. And, you know, in the times of pandemic, I actually read a funny meme yesterday that said, when this pandemic is over and humans are extinct, I hope the next generation makes chicken nuggets out of us like we did with dinosaurs. So, you know, like if there's some sort of animal uprising, I just feel for, you know, these creatures and even how perhaps this mess got started with in the first place, you know, starting with animals in captivity who should not be in captivity.
There are more tigers. There are more big cats being kept as pets in a single county in Texas than there are in all of the zoos of North America. There are more big cats living as pets in the United States than there are in the wild on planet Earth. That's dispiriting on almost every level. The fact, though, that you don't see a lot of mistreatment of the cats on this show. It's not like one of those
Sally Struthers weepy commercials where you go, oh my God, sure, we've got to do something.
Like the Sarah McLachlan commercial.
As the thing progresses, though, it becomes less and less about the cats and more about the infighting of it. It's sort of like Walking Dead. It's less about killing the zombies. It's about the fight between the people that are well. It's about these crazy people. And the cats are kind of a backdrop. It's just the vehicle through which they're fighting. So it's a ridiculous show. We asked you to join us because Sarah Tiemann is our promotions manager here at WGN Radio, and she's a big book reader. And I said, Sarah, we did this last year. Tell us some of the great books you're reading, and maybe every few months you could check in and tell us how it's going. Well, now more than ever, we need something to read. And so January, February, March, a little into April now, this is the one quarter of the way mark. How many books have you read?
I have 30 logged, and I am currently reading 31, 32, and 33. Because, you know, I can't read one at the same time.
You told me in an email that where you had set goals in the past, you weren't going to do that this year. But so you're on a pace to read about 120 books this year.
Yeah, currently, when I look at where I was last year, I'm about 5 books ahead of where I was last year, so outpacing 2019.
If I may, I'm going to read just quickly the titles you've read in fiction, and then you tell me which ones you are recommending. This Is How It Always Is, The Giver of Stars, The Nightingale, The House on Mango Street, Song of the Trees, The Crossing Places, Disappearing Earth, Queenie, Dumped, actually. Nick Spaulding wrote that. It's the one that you were... Is that the one you did for your book club?
Yeah, that was a book club one. It was a lot of fun.
To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Out of the Easy, Nothing to See Here, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, The Dutch House, Runaway, 4 more now, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, Conduits, The Ballad of Jinx Jenkins, P.S. I Still Love You, and The Sun is Also a Star. So those are the 19 fiction books you've read. I'll ask you about nonfiction in a second, but what are the stars in that group?
Number one, I started the year off with a bang. This Is How It Always Is by Lori Frankel, I think is a book that I would recommend to everyone, and I think everyone should read it. It's one of those books where, as a writer, I wish I had written that book, but for a few various reasons I probably couldn't have. And I've been known to cheat before and like read to the back of the book first and then like go back to the front and reread, which I know a lot of people are horrified about, but I didn't do that for this one, and I'm really glad I didn't, because at the back there's an author's note that sort of ties the book in a very unique way. But basically, it's about a family, and one of that family has all sons, and their last son is a little bit different. He is transgender, and it is a magical book, the way the family kind of moves to acceptance. I think they've always accepted, but they've accepted in a more of a quiet mode, like, oh, we accept you, but... so it's sort of their journey of like watching this son and his journey into discovering himself and herself and who, you know, they should be.
It's a figurative and a literal journey, right? Don't they travel?
Yeah, they do. They were originally living in Wisconsin and then they moved to Seattle.
I see. Okay, so that you started out with a bang, and if there was one book you could do worse than This Is How It Always Is, Lori Frankel. Give me another title.
You know what? I reread The Nightingale. I have joined 2 book clubs this year. That's a good book. It's 500 some odd pages. Historical fiction is probably my favorite. And World War II, I always seem to gravitate to that topic in particular. So I always, you know, that's a worthy book. The Giver of Stars by JoJo Moyes. A couple of her film books have been turned into films. It's Me Before You or one of those titles like that. But that one's actually about pack horse librarians in Kentucky during Eleanor Roosevelt set that up. And I thought that was really interesting. Another one on my to-read list is also kind of dealing with the same topic. And then, you know, it's fun to revisit books you've read as a child. So when I was poking around in February, I tried to read some more African and Black history, kind of focusing on that. So that's how I ended up picking up Roll of Thunder's Hear My Cry. And I think it was 2019 or 2018 that book turned 40 years old. So it's just like a year or two older than me. And it was, you know, it's an interesting book to reread that as an adult, because I originally read it as a kid.
I remember that in school as well.
Roll of Thunder, yeah. Hear My Cry, Mildred D. Taylor. You recollect that fondly, Griffin, too?
I actually don't know if I read it, but I remember
that you were supposed to read it.
Everybody had a copy, you know.
Yeah, I think it was like a Newbery Book Club, you know, award winner, finalist or whatever. So, and then I haven't gotten into the Netflix series of, you know, P.S. I Love You or whatever, but I've been reading the books. And
I just watched I just watched the sequel like a week
ago.
Is
it worth it?
The sequel was tough, but the okay. first one's good. You definitely should watch the first one. If you like it, keep going.
Okay. Well, I realized that I was starting to read some pretty heavy-going books, especially as we were airing into quarantine. So I'm like, maybe I should lighten the mood. And, you know, sometimes reading some YA fiction is always kind of a good mood breaker.
Give me another couple titles real quick. Then I'll break, and then I want you to tell me. Well, we'll segue to nonfiction. That's where I have more to say. What else did you like? And it sounds to me, though, you've read 19 fiction books, Sarah. Is there? I'm going to post this on my Facebook page, if you don't mind. I presume you would more or less recommend these. Maybe you could rank them in ascending or descending order. But were there any clunkers in there, ones that really disappointed you?
You know what? I really got into Ruta Sepetys last year, and I wasn't loving Out of the Easy. There's some other books I want to get back to her on, so we'll see. Another one, Disappearing Earth, fascinating read about an area of the world that I know a little bit less of. It took place in Kamchatka. So if you're a Risk player, you might know of the Kamchatka. Like in Russia. So that was a very interesting read. Two girls go missing, and the way the book kind of weaves in other characters of the town is very interesting. It's kind of a winding, maneuvering read, but a fascinating one, just kind of how the landscape plays in too. A clunker for me was a book club read, Conduits. It's basically a short story kind of conglomeration written by more of a local writer based on, I think, maybe some of his dissertation for Columbia. A couple short stories I thought were real powerful, but when they assigned that book, I kind of did an inward groan, like, oh boy, I'm not going to like this. And then I thought to myself, hey, you need to give it a try.
What about Queenie by Candace Carty Williams?
You know what? It's gotten really good reviews. Some of the reviews said it's like the Bridget Jones of 2019 or 2020. Parts of it I really enjoyed. Parts of it were a really tough read. The other one, I've just saw it on this list and now I lost it. Taylor Jenkins Reid, I pretty much have written everything she's put out now. And I would say my favorite still of hers is the one from last year, which is the rock and roll one. Daisy Jones and the Six. Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, if you want kind of like a fun beach read, I'd say. That falls in that category.
There's no such thing as a beach read anymore because there's no such thing as a beach.
No. If people are lounging on their sofa or whatever.
Yes, that's the new beach. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Taylor Jenkins Reid. The list is 19. We'll post it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John there. On nonfiction, you have 11 books, and they are these: Dear Girls, Intimate Tales, Untold Stories, and Advice for Living Your Best Life, How We Fight for Our Lives, a memoir, Homework, a memoir, Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now, Mary Schmeek's compilation of columns, Dreyer's English, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. I read that and interviewed the author. maybe one of the most depressing experiences of my life. The Body, A Guide for Occupants. You and I have spoken in the past about Bill Bryson's bestseller, The Body. Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey. Midnight in Chernobyl. The Day the World Came to Know. 9/11 in Gander, Newfoundland. And When Breath Becomes Air, the 11 nonfiction books. What's the standout for you there?
That was the Day the World Came to Town, right? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I did misread that, didn't I? Thank you, Griffin. The Day the World Came to Town.
That's what the musical was based on.
Right.
Yes, Come From Away.
Was that as everybody, of course, just loved the Broadway show that came through Chicago. Did you love the book, too?
Well, this is the second time I've read the book. I read that for a new book club that I joined up for. Musical is miles better to me than the book, but the book is still interesting. So I think it's a worthy read, you know, and it was interesting rereading it in the midst of the pandemic because I was supposed to read it in March for the book club that we were supposed to get together. And then obviously we didn't get together and I'm like, oh, I have time. And then all of a sudden an email came out that said, hey, we're going to meet virtually. I'm like, oh shoot, I have to reread this book.
Your 9/11 list here, your pandemic reading list nonfiction here is tough. You've got 9/11, Chernobyl, The Sixth Extinction, which is about how humans are wiping out life on Earth, and it just goes on.
I know. That's why now you understand why you got to break it up with a little ridiculous like YA fiction, kind of lighten the mood.
But go back to my first question about this category. What's the standout for you?
That is tough. It's probably The Body, maybe.
Bill Bryson
The Body.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Midnight in Chernobyl is up there, too.
Let's talk about Midnight in Chernobyl for a second. Adam Higginbotham's book, it I presume, is about what happened at Chernobyl?
Yes. I was younger when that catastrophe happened. And, you know, obviously we know that this happened, but it is a frightening look on, humankind and maybe the things that we should not be messing around with, especially as, the book begins. This all happens in a Russian-occupied territory, what is now, forgive me, the Ukraine, thank you. They start off building this nuclear plant and they cut corners because they don't have all the supplies they need. So, as you read, you're like holding your breath with every page because, you're like, well, they probably shouldn't be doing this to begin with because they don't have the right supplies. They're not taking the right precautions.
Yep.
Like, it is a disaster in the making. And then the accident occurs. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, there's mass destruction, like, immediately in terms of, like, human life that is decimated. And really only one gentleman immediately loses his life. And the Chernobyl plant is, basically his grave. Other people, it's a little bit more horrifying than that. More people kind of stretch out and have further complications as they're rushed about. And one man miraculously completely recovers from it. And then sadly, probably due to the stress, ends up ending his life, years later. But what a sobering read.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the docuseries or the movies that came out afterwards. I mean, in the last couple of years, there have been some pretty compelling productions for us to watch on TV about this. This sounds like along those lines. And the funny thing is the, almost harder to process thing about those is, as you're reading it or we're watching it, we know how this ends, right?
Right.
So they're cutting the corners thinking, it'll be okay, we'll be fine. And you go, no, but you can't stop it. So you just continue to watch or read. In just a little way, it reminds me of what's happening with the pandemic right now.
Yeah.
And that going viral the last couple of weeks is the Bill Gates talk where he warned everybody about this.
Yeah.
Barack Obama gave a
pitch to Congress to fund research along these lines, and they didn't heed his advice, and now that's gone viral. And Obama was saying exactly what has happened could happen. Time magazine covers. Eric Zorn posted this the other day. For the last 7 or 8 years, minus 2 years, I think the most recent one was 2017, but there were Time cover stories about SARS and MERS and Ebola and the coming plagues. And every year, Time's been telling us this could happen again and it could be worse. We just don't pay attention, do we?
We don't listen. Yeah. No. And yeah, and that book, Midnight in Chernobyl, is, you're right, is this playing out for us right now in real time. And it's horrifying.
The book, The Body, A Guide for Occupants by Bill Bryson, he often writes about travel. In this case, he wrote about the human being and how it's constructed, is just fascinating. And I will say this, as we all feel physically challenged these days, you read this book and you go, dang, I got myself a machine. This is amazing how we work. Yeah. So you are kind of almost uplifted by the complexity and how amazing it is that the human being works. And it's just fascinating that way. I'm out of time, Sarah. Give me one more title, fiction or nonfiction, that you want your readers, our listeners, to know about.
Saeed Jones. I saw him at a Chicago Ideas Week event last fall, and his memoir, it's a tough read, another one of those toughers, but really, really good. And I'll give a shout out to Mary Schmeek. Her compilation of columns in Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautifully to Me Now is I think strikes the right tone for everything that we are going through now. Even listening to you read her column today, you know, she's one to read for sure.
She's one of those people you go, wow, we got her too. Lucky Chicago, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And this latest compilation includes some of the columns in her first compilation, as well as some new ones as well. And if it's not on your shelf as a Chicagoan, then you need to do that right now. Sarah, thank you so much. Keep reading. Let's talk again in a few months. I'll post this on my Facebook page. Well done, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks for talking to me over Tiger King guy.
You stay well.
You too.
Somewhere Dylan Passage is going, wait, you did that instead. Downtown Chicago getting ready for the governor's press conference. That is expected at 2:30 today. The president is not doing one today. It looks like they're taking the holiday weekend off, although the president says he's going to make his quote-unquote biggest decision, and that is if and to what degree he should reopen the economy after Easter. It's a priority for the president to get the economy rolling. And of course, it's a priority for him and all of us to stay healthy. So how do you balance that? He is saying he's deciding that this weekend. It's his biggest decision. What's the latest from Governor J.B. Pritzker? That's at 2:30 here on WGN Radio. Just a quick note about government. And by the way, my number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you want to call or text in, we do have this half hour kind of open for you to tell me how it's going out there. Maybe you've got a question, a concern, an observation, something you want to pass along, you want to tell on your neighbors because they were playing volleyball yesterday, whatever it is that you want to do. And by the way, that's where we're going with this now. We're getting closer and closer to the goal line, and you know they're going to move it if we don't behave. So let's all behave. Remember, the governor said 2 days ago that he doesn't see large gatherings in the state of Illinois until after we have a vaccine. That means Cubs, that means Lollapalooza, that means concerts. I'm not exactly sure what that means, right? But that's how dour he was about this. So 312-981-7200. If there's something you want to share or pass along. And by the way, is that Bob on line 6? Bob, I'll go to you first, and then I'll take your call, too. 312-981-7200. You can text in as well. Just a real quick anecdote, though. One of the most unusual, I thought fascinating conversations that I was part of this week, and there have been many with my colleagues here at WGN Radio, was when Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, was on with us and described in greater detail what was a news blurb this week in order to get $3 million worth of PPE. And I think that was maybe masks and gowns and other personal protective equipment for people. They were dealing with vendors across the country, maybe the world. One of the vendors said they would sell these PPE to the state of Illinois. But the guy said, look, I've got other people in line for this. And we all know that we're bidding against other states. He said, my bank closes at 4 o'clock on Tuesday or Wednesday. And if I don't have Illinois' check in my account by the close of business that day, I'm going to sell to somebody else. And we did not want to lose these thousands of devices. So Mendoza tells her assistant comptroller in Springfield, get the money to the guy. That woman then gets in her car in Springfield, and she drives up I-55 to a McDonald's parking lot and meets a guy in the McDonald's parking lot in Dwight. And she hands him a freshly cut $3 million check from the state of Illinois, hands it to him in the McDonald's parking lot. And the guy says, okay, I'll get you your goods in 2 days. And 2 days later, the goods did arrive. But she said, it's like a shady drug deal. It's like the Wild West out there. That's what it's like for us to try and secure these things for our residents. If we learn anything, we have to learn that this is no way to run a restaurant, a railroad, or a medical care system. So Bob called us. How long ago were you on with us, Bob? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Hi, King John. How's things?
I'm just fine. The question is, how are you? You talked to me earlier this week and said that you had been tested something like 5 or 10 days ago.
I was tested on the 1st. Got my results today.
Okay, you were tested on the 1st of the month. So today is the 11th. So 10 days or 11 days ago. Were you feeling ill when you got tested?
No, I just I went to the Joliet Center because it was for first response people and anyone over 65. And I'm older 65, yes. And because in the business I'm in telecommunications, I do have a right to travel letter, and I've got to go into village halls, that kind of stuff. So I figured I might as well. It's here. I'm eligible. Get it done.
What was the result?
I am negative, John.
And it took you 10 days to find out.
Find out.
Which is almost beside the point, right? That means because I presume for the 10 days you were still going about your business, right?
I was extremely careful. I was very careful.
I understand.
Spraying everything and else. And to your point, which you were just talking about, my wife bought two N95 masks today. Okay? Two. She paid $20.
Where did she find two?
At a drugstore.
They had two, like individual, and they were $10 a piece?
Yeah, they were selling them. They took them out of the bubble pack.
Really?
Yeah, and they were selling them for $10 a piece.
The hardware store I go to sometimes was doing that with toilet paper this week. They could sell you a roll, even though toilet paper is not hard to come by now, but that's
right.
What they were doing. I'm not sure how I feel about that markup for an N95.
That's a 1,000% markup.
Yeah. So she bought two of them. Yeah, here's the other thing. I, for the first time yesterday, Bob, shopped for groceries with the mask on. It was the most uncomfortable thing I've gone through. It's hard to breathe. It was hot. It didn't fit well. My glasses weren't riding on my nose properly. I kept adjusting it. It's when I see people who are going about their day, you first responders and medical professionals, I'm telling you what, that's hats off to you. That's a hard way to live.
One piece of advice is to adjust it by the strings. Don't touch the...
Oh, God, I was doing that, Griff.
Yeah, I recommend that.
You wear one every day, do you, at the store?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I saw a nurse online to adjust by the strings if you can.
And I'll make one more suggestion.
Yeah.
You know, for the garbage bags where you have that like that plastic thing or even like a tie wrap or a cable wrap.
Yeah.
Don't put it around your ears. Put it through that and put it around the back of your head.
Ah.
It's a lot easier, and you're not, and you don't feel that pressure on your
ears.
Are you
tired of the
long.
Me- Yeah, keep going, Bob. By the way, Bob, before I let you go, so when you got that, was it a letter, email, or phone call?
No, phone call.
Phone call.
And it says, and what it, what shows up on your phone, it says response center.
Ah.
So it doesn't even show up a number. They said it was going to show up as a number, and it didn't. It showed up as response center.
So then is it an automated call?
No, no, no. It was a live person, and she talked to me for probably 5 minutes or more.
Good news. All right. So Bob is out and about. He's essential, and he's doing his work, and he's tested negative. But as they say, pretend like you've got it. That's the only way the rest of us don't. So let's all be safe, Bob.
Well, John, you're the king. You've got to need to start, imperial orders have got to come from you.
Yeah, I appreciate you listening, my friend. Stay well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I want to be king someday, I like to say, but the paperwork is tied up at Cook County. Now I'm not so sure I want to be. Producer Griff says a few of you have called in and said, hey, are you going to do the joke compilation before the governor? We do speed jokes on our show at 9:30. One day it was just so sad. I said, somebody tell a joke. We didn't. We've been doing it every morning at 9:30. Highlights from the joke reel coming up.
Thank you, Rokan. It's 2:18 on WGN. This week, Marley and Elliot are uncovering Chicago's best-kept secrets, Blink. And you might miss these foodie favorites. It's Chicago's best hidden gems, Sunday night, 10:30. WGN-TV, 2:19 is the time. About 2:30, the governor is scheduled to speak for his daily coronavirus press update. By the way, somebody just texted in, Pat the firefighter. Thank you, sir. I'm a fireman and nurse. I wear an N95 for every call we go on, plus 8 hours at ER. It's very uncomfortable, but it's worth it. I assure you, you do not want COVID. John, I'm a nurse in labor and delivery. I'm pretty used to the masks for surgery and deliveries. Now we have to wear them the entire shift. I was just talking about how I wasn't wearing the thing well, properly. Now, I don't have an N95 anyway, but the one I had was a pretty good one. But it was just surprisingly uncomfortable. And for those of you that are living in those things, thank you for doing what you're doing. I did want to make one quick notice about just protective gear and staying clean. There's a corporation you may have heard of called Uline, based across the border in Wisconsin. It employs thousands of folks in this area. They've got cleaning supplies, masks, gloves. They are providing to businesses, but they've cut off non-essential businesses so they can make sure they get it to government and hospitals. We spoke to them earlier in the week and just learned a little bit more about Uline. The company still does an 800-page catalog. You may have seen this in an office or a building. They're all around the globe. You could actually check one out. It's pretty funny to see all of the things Uline sells. They've got everything a company needs to operate. And they've been busy providing cleaning supplies. We were able to get some of their products for us here at WGN. We're an essential service, radio and TV, and they've been helping us keep this place clean so we can do what we do. Thank you to all of our friends at Uline, the employees and the company, for being there for the essential businesses right now. Uline.com. 9:30 or so after the news weekdays, we do a joke or two of the day. Producer Griffin strung some of them together, and it sounds a little like this. Told my doctor I broke my arm in two places. He said, well, then stop going to those places. Guy with a bad case of laryngitis goes to his doctor's house late one night. The doctor's wife answers the door, and the guy says, is the doctor home? And the wife says, no, come on in. Strip club is shuttered due to the coronavirus. Sign out front says, sorry, we're clothed.
That's a good one. I like that one.
You know what Beethoven's favorite fruit is, don't you?
No, what is it?
Banana. You guys know I'm studying German with my free time now. I just learned the word for brassiere. It's Holzum von Ploppen.
Is Dave just not finding any of these
I'm here. I'm sorry.
I didn't know if Dave was connected to the broadcast here on WGN. Hey, Dave, I keep having dreams about Tom Jones.
Is that common?
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone.
It's not unusual, Dave.
It's not unusual.
Steve, why doesn't a pig's tail wake up at 4 a.m.?
Something about being early.
Because it's twirly.
Twirly.
Oh, it's twirly, twirly.
Two guys were discussing their most frightening experiences. One guy says, a bear jumped out at me and went, grrr. growl. I pooped my pants. The other guy says, if a bear jumped out at me, I would too. First guy says, no, I mean just now when I went growl. I tried donating blood today to try and help out. Never again. Too many stupid questions like, whose blood is this? Where did it come from? Why is it in a bucket? My darn neighbor was banging on my door at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. Fortunately, I was still up playing my drums. Wow, a 4-foot-tall fortune teller has escaped from prison. Steve, you didn't put that on the news. Police are looking for a small, medium, at large. What did the buffalo say to his boy when he left for college? Bye, son! Imagine a little buffalo out there on the range waving. Two senior citizen couples were hanging out. The first husband says, we went to a great restaurant last night. And the second husband says, really, where'd you go? First guy says, what's the name of that beautiful flower with thorns? The other guy says, Rose? And the first guy says, yeah. Hey, Rose, what's the name of that restaurant we went to last night? So that's what we do, something like that, every day at 9:30. So do or don't listen, but put it this way, you've been warned. It's funny because, you know, we do the news. Bob Surratt's on weekdays on WGN Radio from 5 to 9. I come on at 9, and we continue to do the news. It's information about medicine and the virus and the markets, and it's just a tough spin. So every now and then we'll just step back and tell some jokes at 9:35 or 9:40, and then we go right back into the storm that is the news these last few days. I'll pause here. We're getting ready for the governor's daily press briefing. We think it's going to happen at 2:30. But I will say one surprising thing to me, and it was kind of a, I don't know if this is good news as any of it, but the fact that the insurance companies are rebating people's premiums. Virtually all of them are saying, look, you're driving less, therefore you're getting in fewer accidents, so we're having to pay out fewer claims. So you keep paying the premiums every month, but we're just getting rich on all this money coming in. So we will give some of it back to you in the form of rebates. So if your premium was $100 for your car, next month it might only be $50. It depends on the company and the amount and when they're going to weave this in, but that's the idea. You're going to essentially get part of $12 billion they're giving back. Here's the thing I don't know. If they have to do that, is there some sort of state-mandated percentage that they have to give back if the premiums exceed the expenditures? I don't know. But folks are getting money back as a result of this. And if I was an insurance company and I was flush, I don't know that I would feel like I had to give it back. But lo and behold, they are. It's 225.